one in the direction of Mike Sims-Walker. This one's going to be batted and caught. Touchdown. Oh, my gosh. How did that happen? It was batted back into the arms of Mike Thomas. And the Jaguars have won it. Holy cow.
How did that happen?
That's unbelievable. Mike Sims-Walker batted it back. Oh, Hail Mary.
Live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, glad you're along with us. Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union. You can follow us on Twitter and Tony as well. And the easy way to do it, at MD underscore 1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, and at 1010XL Fat Tony, and also at 1010XL Warren. Don't forget the lovely and talented Ms. Lauren Brooks back at 1010XL World Headquarters. Ryan, you were out at practice yesterday. I missed practice yesterday. I was grinding away in the backyard. 7 hours of yard work yesterday.
That sounds so adult.
It really was. I felt, you know what? I went to Home Depot. Oh, I said, no. I bought a new trimmer edger. I got a new hedge trimmer. I got the whole thing, mowed the front, mowed the back, did all the stuff. 7 hours.
If I were you, I would have said on the show on Friday, two tickets to the Colts game. Everybody wants to come
do my yard. Yes. that's not a bad idea. You know what? It'll get long again at some point in the future, and I've got tickets to the game. You were out, and I read your practice report yesterday, and you said basically Chad Henne, you felt picked up right where he left off. Tell us how he looked yesterday.
He looked good. I mean, he played 23 snaps of 11 on 11, went 15 and 19. No pads, so not a lot of coverage, so it was built to have an offensive day. But, you know, he ran a two-minute drill his last segment. He went 5 of 8. So, you know, he looked solid. Bortles, as I'm sure they've talked about this morning, no snaps with the ones yesterday. He went 19 snaps with the twos, 11 of 16. So let's see what Gus does today with the quarterbacks.
Well, is it really that much different than what we've seen up to this point, right? I think Chad Henne said one of his better off seasons that we've seen as a quarterback here in OTAs, mini camps, what have you, now into training camp. And Blake has consistently so far outperformed in games what he's done on the practice field.
Yeah. And I would have to look back, because 15 and 19 maybe like his best percentage.
Yeah, that was a really good day. Yeah.
But yeah, there are, with these two guys in practices this year, it seems like when one's bad in a day, they're both bad. So there really isn't a lot of outliers. So they've sort of been on the same path.
How much chance is there in your mind? I mean, look, you've got Chad Henne, who's played well, certainly played well last week with the ones, and did everything that we hope to see from the first team offense, consistently drove him down the field, finally got him into the end zone. You'd like to see it in the end zone a little bit more, but, you know, for all the good work Blake has done, he hasn't put it in the end zone with the second team yet. With some practices where he's going to get first team reps this week and a quarter of play, is that legitimately enough? I know the conversation, you said we're on the verge of a conversation, but is that legitimately enough in your mind for the coaching staff to change course, even if he is scintillating in that one quarter of play?
I don't think so. If there was a giant concern about Chad Henne being functional in week one, Blake Bortles would be starting Friday night okay, here's your shot, kid. You know, people are going to look back at Seattle with Russell Wilson 2 years ago. Flynn was hurt that third preseason game, was already stinking up the joint. Wilson started the third game, and then they gave him the job before the fourth game. So different scenarios. With this scenario is I think they want to give him some work with the ones, mostly to see what he does against a first-team defense. And you know, get him as many snaps as possible. But I would still be very surprised if Henne's not the guy week one.
Yeah, so would I. Does all this stuff with Jeff Prosser mentioned, you know, and you expect that this is supposed to be a good quarterback class, and we've seen with our own eyes Blake Bortles has looked good in these games, but is it at all mitigated when you see this wave of guys going up against second teamers, rookie quarterbacks performing at a high level right now?
I don't devalue it, because if you're from Bortles' standpoint, you're the third overall pick. He's doing what he should do, moving the team against second team defense, and it should be a positive. He's doing it with guys who may not be here, so he's being able to lead them. As for Carr and Mettenberger, maybe they're underdrafted. You know, the Jaguars same thing. Oakland's in a bad spot right now because Matt Schaub is done.
Right.
And so do you go to Carr? The Jaguars at least have some wiggle room because Henny showed that he could play well on Thursday night.
And I think Minnesota's kind of in the same boat as the Jaguars. And they have a little bit more cover because of where they drafted Teddy Bridgewater. But Matt Castle's had a pretty good preseason as well. In fact, they were raving about how he was playing until Bridgewater came in and did what he did. And again, you see it in the second half of the game. So how do you handle the narrative this week as – you can't really say what's going on. We're going to really have to go based on what Gus Bradley says in a post-practice open media session and report on that. I mean, how do you, if you think Blake is scintillating, if you think Blake is struggling, how do you give that to your listenership, to your viewership, to your readership, if you can't directly report on what's happening in 11-on-11s?
Well, my narrative would be Blake Bros start week one.
Well, that
hasn't changed for me. Maybe.
Blake Bortles, in all seriousness, Blake Bortles goes out there and struggles against the ones all week. You're going to feel the same way?
Well, yeah, but because I'm going to stick with my he should play right away thing. But turning on a serious note, answer your question is from my perspective in terms of what I write it this week is you got to be you can't make any judgments until Friday night. So you're gonna basically what we're gonna do is report the news. Okay, this is what Gus says. This is what Blake says. This is what his teammates say. If he works with ones today, it's time that we can finally go to Zane Beadles and say what was he like in the huddle? He's right. Never been in Zane Beadles' huddle before.
Right.
Okay, what's his presence like out there? You know, talk to a couple of the, you know, Alan Ball, Jonathan Cyprian. What did you think of facing Bortles? Because they really haven't faced him either. So that's the narrative for this week, getting other guys talking about it. And then on Friday night, when we see for our own eyes, you know, that's when we can make our snap judgment.
All right. We'll get you talking about it today. If you'd like to weigh in at 641-1010, our Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. Really an NFL-wide question, a great proliferation of penalty flags this preseason, a ridiculous amount. We've already reached more than half the illegal contact penalties that there were during the regular season all of last year in less than two, because there's still one game to go, less than two full preseason weeks. Now, will that pace hold up? The NFL says that teams will make the adjustment, that the referees are not going to make the adjustment. We'll talk about that. But the question of the day is, has it impacted your enjoyment of watching football with the flags flying? At one point, there were, as Peter King reported in his Monday Morning Quarterback column, 11 flags in 12 snaps, 10 plays that actually counted, 2 called back because of penalties, but basically a flag a snap or a flag a play in the New Orleans Saints game coming up or this past weekend.
Yeah, part of me on that is, if you know, break down those flags, okay, what's first half starters, second half backups who just don't know how to play NFL football yet? The second thing is, okay, if I'm a starting corner in this league, do I just try and survive this next week? Because knowing week one, it's going to be back to the same a little bit.
You think it'll be back to the same?
And they got to throttle it back because these games are too long. There's no flow. It's not working.
Well, I tell you, I thought an interesting item in there is that one assistant coach has told his players to consider, his receivers, consider wearing baggy jerseys. You know, everyone's gone to the tight jerseys so defenders can't get a hold of you. And if they're going to call it this way, let's make it more obvious for the referees. Let's let them grab you all the time because they're calling everything that's close. I thought it was kind of interesting. Also, St. Louis is apparently practicing with their defensive backs holding tennis balls in their hands. And they've been the least penalized team up to this point. I mean, by almost no penalties of the ones that they're emphasizing with pass interference and illegal contact and the like, defensive holding as well. So if you want to get on board on that, you're welcome to as well, 641-1010. Got a lot to talk about with the Jags. Cecil Shorts back on the practice field, the offensive line. Dakota Watson is back as well. Paul Posluszny, just a brief absence, so that looks like it was not going to be a big deal. And what does CBS think about the Jacksonville Jaguars' chances in 2014? We'll get into all that coming up today. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday with Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. What do you got? Huh?
Keep going.
To Catch Hell Blues by the White Stripes. You know how I know that?
You went to high school with Meg White.
No, I did not. Is she in the White Stripes?
That's right, right?
Yeah.
Megan Jack White?
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. I went to high school.
I don't know if she's a white anymore. I do believe they divorced, but...
Tough break.
Yeah, it was a married couple. It's just a two-person band.
I went to high school with Terrence Trent D'Arby's sister, Lisa.
Oh, gosh.
She sat in front of me in homeroom. D'Arby Dempsey, that's the way it went in homeroom back in the day. Jacksonville Axemen, Tony.
Yeah.
Playing in the championship this coming up Saturday?
Yes, they are. The Axemen won the South Conference. They take on the North Conference champion Philadelphia Fight. That's coming up this Saturday, August 23rd over there at UNF. I do believe kickoff is set for 7 o'clock on Saturday night for the USA Rugby League Championship again over there at UNF.
All right.
At Hodges Field.
We've got tickets all week long. If you want to go see the Axemen in action, you can watch the Jags on Friday night, watch the Axemen on Saturday live at Hodges Stadium. In fact, if you'd like a pair of tickets, all we're going to have to do, you don't even have to pick them up. You just go to the stadium. Your name will be at will call. They'll have the tickets waiting for you. I'll be caller number 3 right now at 641-1010, and Lauren Brooks will get your name on the list, and we'll do it every hour of Jaguars Today this week. We'll give away a pair of tickets to go see the Axemen and the Philadelphia Fight in the Rugby League Championship. Ryan, let's talk, before we get to the phone lines, let's talk about this offensive line a little bit and what you make of it right now. We find out now, you know, it's Austin Pastor out for a month. Cam Bradfield, I don't think anybody's panicking about Cam Bradfield holding down the right tackle job, presumably for the first couple weeks of the season. But the battle continues in the interior of the offensive line. Again, reading your blog yesterday, Jock McClendon, 23 first-team snaps. They all went to him at center. Brandon Leonard got the reps at guard. Is it going to be a flip-flop this week, or do they think that that's indicative of McClendon right now topping the depth chart tentatively?
Well, it's interesting because start off with Bradfield. I mean, he's solid, not good enough to start on a regular basis, but if he can hold down the fort for a couple games, it should be okay. At center, it's a mess. I mean, they're 3 weeks from the opener, and if they have a plan, it changes every day, it seems like. So a week ago when Linder got center reps, I thought that McClendon was either going to be the starting right guard or cut. Now, with McClendon getting first-team center reps, it's like, okay, what's Brewster? If he doesn't win the job, is he done?
Right.
So I think McClendon and Brewster could be battling for one roster spot, depending on Bo Wankel's ankle. Say that 5 times fast. But
yeah. That was a good sentence.
I think Linder's – I mean, if I'm them, I leave Linder where he's at right now. He's going to be your right guard. If he's going to move to center in 8 weeks, wait until then. You know, stick him in right guard right now. But I still think it's going to be narrowly Mike Brewster in week one.
I always rely on the likes of Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli to tell me how the offensive line really is performing, other than the coaching staff, what Gus is going to tell you himself, because I don't feel like I'm an adequate judge of that. I don't know always what I'm looking for. So on Friday, I asked Jeff Loggeman before the show, what you see from the centers on Thursday night. He said, I really don't want to comment. I want to go watch the film. So he watched the film, and I caught up with him after the show, and he said, basically, you know what? All the centers played pretty well. The exception, obviously, Brewster gave up the sack and had the holding penalty on that, and but he felt like outside of that play, he wasn't terrible. Uh-huh. McClendon, according to Jeff, didn't get any reps, at center. So I guess, you know, what he's seeing, and I know Gus indicated right after the game without watching the film that he felt like Brewster had played pretty well. It may just be a case of back and forth right up until the final minute here.
Yeah, and it could stretch into the regular season. Do they feel like McClendon's better suited for to face a nose tackle and a 3-4? They feel Brewster is better against a 4-3 team where they can get him out a little bit on, screens and stuff, so... If both make the team, it's going to be, could be toggling back and forth for a while, but, you want some continuity at that position.
And one thing, too, I think that could get overlooked here is you look at the way that Mercedes Lewis finished the season last year. He scored a touchdown in 4 straight weeks and seems to have the trust of Chad Henne. Some of Chad's better throws went to Mercedes last week, including one that wasn't completed where he gave him the chance to go up and get it over a defensive back.
Drew the penalty.
Yeah, drew the penalty, right. So, with that, you want him available to exploit the seam of the defense, but if you've got a shaky offensive line, I think Mercedes Lewis is going to be your third tackle, your sixth offensive lineman early in the season.
And maybe this was a reaction to that, is they went 2 tight end at least a dozen times in that first quarter. So they had Barton on the field. Maybe they want to shore up that pass protection to get the ball to Lewis. So, you know, if you have protection issues, you put an extra tight end. Okay, that means you're bringing a receiver off the field.
Right.
So, or so it has a ripple effect. But, I mean, it's you know, if Brewster gets one snaps today or this week, like Gus intimated yesterday, then we'll see how the game goes. But I think their plan changed a little bit because they're going to give Bowanko a long run on Thursday night until he got hurt, and he was playing guard when he got hurt.
Right. I think they were just kind of mixing and matching him with Linder, see how they looked alternately at those two spots. But, you know, right now, what was a mild concern, I think, coming in, because particularly the injury to Austin Pastor has become much more of a concern on the right side of the offensive line. 641-1010, you want to get in and talk Jags with Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony. The way to do it is pick up the phone and dial. Matt has done that. Matt, welcome to Jaguars Today. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing, man?
Good, good.
All right. First of all, I just want to say, man, if the NFL don't get rid of that new rule, I mean, it's just, I actually started to turn the game off because that penalty is just ridiculous, man. I mean, you got to, I know people want to see a lot of points scored, but that's just a ridiculous rule, man. How in the world you can't, you won't be able to touch the receiver. And they, some of the calls they were making was just, I don't know. But with Blake Bortles, man, I agree with what you said earlier, man. He's the third pick. He's supposed to, you know, look like he's looking when he comes in, you know. But I just think we need to pump the brakes a little bit because, you know, these defenses, you know, aren't showing their full packages. Basically, they're just basic defense. I think we need to pump the brakes a little bit. And now, if he wasn't looking like he's looking, it would be a concern. But by him being the third pick, you know, he looks pretty good, you know, when he comes in. But I say after about the sixth game of the year, according to what our record is, you know, if we're on the losing end, I think, you know, you might as well put him in and let him get some work with those number one receivers, according to how our record is. That's about all I have, man. Y'all take it easy.
All right, Matt, thank you.
Well, there's definitely a lot of pumping the brakes inside this building regarding Bortles, because they're pointing out to me he didn't only face four-man pass rush, which is true. Third-team defensive lineman, second-team linebackers, that's true. But it's still a fascinating storyline to get through camp.
I think the exciting thing, though, for fans is the raw material. I mean, you see him make throws that you're like, those are big boy throws. And, you know, regardless of whether the pressure's there or not, some guys can make the kind of throws that he's made, and others just physically cannot do what he's done. And, you know, you see him drop that one in to Kerry Taylor after looking off the safety to the other side of the field. You see him rifle that one into Mike Brown, you know, just in extremely tight coverage, and Brown gave him an opportunity to make a little run after the catch as well. Those are plays that at least you look at and you say, wow, we're not going to really have to, you know, kind of cover up for him eventually. Once he gets it and once he's able to handle all the other stuff coming at him, he's got the raw material to be pretty good.
Yeah, and like you said, he's making the kind of plays where when he does begin playing in real games, he won't have to become a manager.
Right.
To be able to make plays and get out of good plays and get into great plays by checking something at the line of scrimmage. So it seems like he has very good command of what he's doing.
Last year, by the way, the average NFL game had 12.2 penalties per game, about, I guess, six per side, 106 penalty yards per game. Week one of the preseason saw that rise by 5.5 calls a game to 17.7. This past week, it went up again to 20.8, nearly 21 penalties per game so far in the National Football
League.
With
starters playing longer, it went up.
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, this week, and they are saying in lockstep that it's not going to change, that, you know, at least the referees approach, that it will be the players that adjust to it. Guys like Chip Kelly have said, hey, you know what, that's just the way it is. If that's the way it's going to be called, if you want to play in this league, you're going to have to play by those rules. I agree with you. I don't know if the NFL is going to push it to that extreme if games start going 3 hours and 15 minutes because they love everything to fit tightly in that TV window.
Uh-huh. I mean, how about like the first week of the season, they have an early game go 3 hours, 25 minutes, which means the beginning of, I think it's the 49er-Cowboy game is the main doubleheader game.
Right.
People don't see the first 15 minutes of that game. Then that's a problem. you know, even when people have Sunday ticket or whatever. But I mean, there just is no flow to some of these games on TV right now. And I turned it. Plus, I had to watch SummerSlam last night.
Oh boy! All right. Oh boy. 641-1010. Let's go back to the lines. Jeff, you're next up on Jaguars today. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you and Ryan doing today?
Good, thanks.
What's up?
Good. All right. Hey, look, I just need a little clarification. These penalties are getting a little bit out of hand, but I'm sure that when the season starts, they're going to stop it. But I saw in two games, that the Jaguar game and then the 49er game, I saw where the referee, after they called the penalties, especially on holding, they kept saying prior to the snap, illegal holding or illegal use of the hands or something. And I was a little confused to that. How can a holding call be made prior to the snap? And the ref said it more than one time.
Well, then that's the ref's mistake, because he's probably saying prior to the pass.
Prior to the ball being in the air.
Yeah, so that's probably where it is, and that's so.
There'd be six or seven penalties on a play where a defensive back was holding a guy prior to the snap. You know, you can go offside.
Yeah, right.
You can go, right, no.
But prior to the pass is where they're calling a lot of it, because you're seeing a pass completed, yet there's still a flag on the field. So these receivers are overcoming being quote unquote illegally contacted and still making plays.
Well, but I think they probably look. We've all seen football in the last however long where a defender is grabbing a jersey, and that's just kind of the state of pass coverage in the National Football League, and guys still make plays. And look, they say you can call holding on every play. Maybe you can call defensive holding on every play. Maybe you can call illegal contact on every play as well. And what they're trying to do, they said last year, I think it's in part a response, they said the numbers were actually down last year. And then of course you have Seattle win. And that's what happens. You know, it's kind of that pendulum effect. One team has success doing it, everybody else complains about it, and it kind of swings back the other direction. At least that's the feeling, that Seattle defensive backs are too physical beyond the rules.
Well, that depicts the Jags, because they want to be a press cover team.
Sure.
With a jam at the line of scrimmage. So it's up to these guys, especially a lot of these young guys on this team, to figure it out.
Yeah, the two calls are defensive holding, which is grabbing jerseys and arms and what have you to throw receivers off course, and illegal contact, which is basically contact other than incidental running where your hips are kind of bumping. Anything beyond that, beyond 5 yards down the field, is what they're looking to call right now.
And then the other one they're calling is the illegal hands to the face of the lineman. Like, I think they got Branch on that Thursday night on a third and long. I mean, it's a physical game. The hand is going to ride up into the helmet.
And that's what they said, though. Any, in the past, they've let that go. Any contact now between hand and a face mask is supposedly going to get called now. So,
and that'll slow down the game, too. And
well, and again, right. I think there needs to be some discretion, doesn't there? Did this really impact the play?
Uh-huh.
You know, and I get, look, I'm a letter of the law guy. If it happens, it happens, and it's kind of hard. If you go back and watch a replay, say, yes, this was, by the letter of the law, a penalty, and the ref throws the flag, I don't know what you're supposed to do about it, but I think if it continues at this pace in the regular season, there's going to have to be some discretion as to whether or not it really impacted the outcome of the play. But then you get into that judgment zone with these referees. I don't know if you really want them doing that either.
Yeah, because they're calling a penalty without seeing what's happened with the ball.
Right.
Okay. So,
and that's what they're supposed
to
be doing.
Yeah, so are you going to have a conference and go, okay, well, let's wave the flag off. So,
which, by the way, is just going to slow it down just as much.
Exactly.
If you're having a conference after every one of these flags get thrown up there. All right, 641-1010. When we return, more on the offensive line, plus the return of Cecil Shorts to the practice field for the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. How old are you, Ryan O'Halloran?
39.
Is this the most 80s song? Is this the quintessential 80s song of the entire decade right there?
Was this Tears for Fears?
Yes.
It's one of them.
I think it's way up there in terms of 80s songs.
I like, what's the song from Breakfast Club, Crowded House?
Don't You Forget About Me.
That's up there.
Is that Crowded House? Who does that?
Is it?
I don't think. That's Simple Minds.
Simple Minds.
Thank you.
Who was that?
Thank you. That's the Peanut Gallery. That was Sexton over there, I believe. Brian Sexton, the Peanut Gallery.
Have you figured out the music theme now?
Everybody Wants to Rule the World and the Catch Hell Blues, Tears for Fears, and the White Stripes. got it. Or was that Fortunato? It may have been Fortunato in the peanut gallery. He wanted full credit. He came up to the window. You got a theme?
No clue.
Really?
No clues. And everybody wants to rule the world. I don't have it either.
Y'all are going to kick yourselves once you figure it out. Okay.
Are we?
You're going to wait until the second hour?
I'm going to kick myself because I'm so good usually at getting these. That's really going to put me on a bad start to my week right here.
Just because it's easy, that's all.
I can guarantee that Mike will not kick himself over not getting this.
Probably won't. I'm thinking I might kick Ryan. But that's just
cause why did you get that?
That's how I am. What about Cecil Shorts? Does that have anything to do with Cecil Shorts, Lauren? Because catch hell blues, no? I'm guessing no.
Not even
back,
close.
Back
sorry.
In practice yesterday. What did you see? I saw in your report one drop, but overall, how did he look?
Yeah, he said he looked rusty, and that probably contributed to that. But he did, he wasn't doing a lot the first hour, sort of thinking, okay, he's even going to participate in team.
Right.
But he did, obviously, a limited fashion. But he looked fast. Yeah, he looked fresh. He's missed 22 days. But
Has it been 22 days?
July 25th to August 17th. Is that right? That is 22.
I'll take your word for it. We'll call it 3 weeks.
He thought he was excited about it because he wants to get some snaps Friday night in Detroit. And, for this offense's perspective, got to have him back.
Yeah, they're getting, it's unfortunate that they're still having so many questions on the offensive line because bit by bit, they're getting their skill guys back now. They got Toby Gerhart back. You've had Mercedes and you've had Marquise Lee have a nice game in his second preseason game. Now you get Cecil Shorts back, and you anticipate at some point you get Allen Robinson back. For Allen Robinson, how much, if he misses the entirety of the preseason, which is my feeling, that just the gist of what people feel is going to happen, how quickly, if at all, can you catch up when you're a rookie and you've missed that much time, despite the fact that he's looked good when he's been on the field? It's been such a little bit of time. Can you catch up throughout the course of the regular season?
I think he can. He'll be in the situation where he can because, they're going to probably give him piecemeal right away. Even if he's active against Philadelphia, you probably figure Hearns works ahead of him.
Right.
Which is he deserves to because he's produced and been out there. So, work him in, give him, if it's 12 snaps the first week, then 20, then 25, and get him, reintroduce him to the offense, and the practice time is going to be key. His injury is 1 week after Shorts's. Who knows the severity differences or whatever. So,
right.
But, next week is barely a practice week because of the Thursday game. So I think it's pretty safe to say you won't see him till Philly, but maybe they'll trot him out there for Atlanta.
How much, if at all, do you think with the wide receiver injury, suspension to Ace Sanders, Tannen Doss with the injury, does that play at all into the two tight end sets as well? You're not as reliant, only have to have two wide receivers out there in those two tight end sets.
I think they're just exploring their options on that, and they had him on the field because they got into some manageable second downs because they were able to get something done on first down, so that opens you up a little bit. But if you have two tight ends, you don't really need a fullback. You can still do some power run stuff. So it's but when they put three out there, it was Lee, Hearns, and Brown. And if you go to opening week, will it be Shorts, Lee, and Hearns? I would say probably.
You would think so. Yeah, you would think so. With the and if they're all healthy and Mike Brown's healthy, you got plenty to get you through the first couple weeks of the season. If they remain that way, the question is, will they remain that
way? Well, that's the thing for this offense right now is you're getting a couple guys back. You just don't want to lose any more guys because this you'll want to be playing uphill with backups right away.
Will Blackman first 2 weeks as punt returner has let three of them bounce in front of him, right? Which you try never to do unless you're trying to let that thing hit and roll into the end zone. Where are you on the punt return position, I guess, with Tannen Doss not getting a chance to show anything right now?
Man, I think Will is just keeping the seat warm for Doss, who's probably keeping the seat warm for Sanders when he comes back.
You think so? I mean, because Doss did lead the league in punt return last year.
Well, I think when Ace comes back, he's going to get every opportunity to get that job back, and the only way to do that is by putting him out there in the game. So, I've heard Doss probably you know, they hope he's ready for Philly. And then I think they put him back there. They may put Blackman back there for the first game. Just catch the ball.
But until, at least for the short term, Doss's roster spot is secure, even though he's hurt.
I think so, because he was out there yesterday walking around a little bit. He didn't have the splint on anymore. And because a week ago, I thought maybe he would have been an IR candidate. But obviously, he didn't need surgery.
Right.
So it was just a bad sprain.
All right, let's get back to the phone call. 641-1010. Pat, you're next up on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on Jaguars Today. How are you?
Good morning, sirs. I've been noticing something, and nothing has been mentioned at all. At least I haven't heard anything from you guys or some of the other fellas about a certain area of our defense which seems to be a little lax. And I've noticed in the first two games that both Tampa and Chicago have exploited the area right after the line and before the DBs, and they must have completed 15 to 20 passes between the two teams. Is that a problem, or is that something that Jacksonville is not worrying about? Or it looks like we may have a linebacker problem.
Well, I don't think you have a linebacker problem. I mean, Chicago, you didn't have Puzlesny. You're probably referring to the 23-yarder to Bennett on third down. I think Cyprian got turned around on that play. Stuper was that middle linebacker, but this team had trouble covering tight ends. But I'll give you one point, is that last year, the only real brick wall I ran into when asking these coaches about things was why this team can't cover a tight end. They didn't think it was a big deal.
They didn't think it was a big deal.
They said, look who we're playing, blah, 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 blah. So I can just opine, but I don't know why they just didn't have good enough players.
Yeah, but I think they feel like, Talvin Smith was necessary to come in part to do just that, right? Uh-huh. That's going to be what they hope is a specialty of his.
I disagreed with them saying it wasn't a big deal because as touchdown central for tight ends, but I mean, Smith had a deflected pass that was intercepted, but yeah, tight ends. The teams are going to challenge this defense to see if they can cover a tight end.
You know, Tony, we've been talking about this for I don't know how many years, honestly, with the Jags' inability to cover the tight end position. So it's not like it's something that popped up. It's all of a sudden new.
No, it's not. I mean, look, we joke around, talking about fantasy football here for as long as we have, Mike. But if you have a tight end that is viable going up against the Jags, you play him, and it's because this team has struggled now for a long time to cover the tight end. They draft a guy like Talvin Smith because of his speed and athleticism, in part because he is supposed to come in and take that tight end away from opposing offenses from time to time. I was curious to see on Friday night how effective he was at that. I thought he played pretty well in that role to this point in the preseason, at least for this Jaguar team. It has been a problem for this team for the past 5 or 6 years.
And then, when right now Talvin's role is nickel, so on early downs or base downs, then you have a Geno Hayes or somebody else trying to cover it.
Yeah. What about Dakota Watson back at practice yesterday?
He was. He took very few snaps in team. He made a nice play in 7-on-7, but, I mean, his victory was just getting out there. It's going to be interesting for Watson now because I don't think he has a big role on this defense.
I mean, it's been – right, he's gotten so far behind right now. Leroy Reynolds has played well. Is that his spot right now to lose, Reynolds?
I think it is. I think Reynolds starts week one and because he's – instead of holding the chair, he's taken it. He's impressed the coaches with his progress. And also on third down, Talvin Smith has taken that role but in his hands and held on to it. So what's Watson now? Is he a Leo on a pass rusher on third down, or so it's going to be?
Is he just quality depth? I mean, guys get hurt too. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the thing about Watson is it's always funny when they sign him. Nobody knows anything about him because he hasn't played.
No, but I think he fits their profile of like the measurables they look at for certain positions. You know, much like defensive backs, you may not be, this in the speed department, this whatever, but if you're a certain size and you have certain abilities, you could play in Gus Bradley's defense.
Yeah, and that's why they signed him on.
I think that's what they're trying to project his skill set.
But I have a hard time seeing him get on the field when the regular season starts.
By the way, 1010XL's official Twitter account claims they state erroneously that the two most quintessential '80s songs are Thriller and Material Girl. I think Material Girl had a Thriller, and I don't think Thriller is anymore. When you hear Everybody Wants to Rule the World, you hear the first note. That's 80s right there. That is quintessential 80s. Submissions for Physical. No, that's not a quintessential. I mean, it's certainly an 80s song, and Every Breath You Take, which was probably number one. The Synchronicity album was number one forever on probably the longest run in the 1980s. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Talking Jags here with Ryan O'Halloran and Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Just put up the new photo contest, by the way. We wrapped up the tattoo contest. It ran for 2 weeks. We got a couple of finalists out of that, giving away a pair of tickets to the home opener, Jags and Colts, week 3 of the regular season. Foundation professionals of Florida feel like you, the fans, are the foundation of the organization. This week, we ask you to go to Facebook.com/Jaguars today and post a picture of your vehicle in a Jaguar motif. I know some people have their entire vehicle or maybe just a game day vehicle, an old beater that they turn into a Jaguar motif kind of vehicle. Post a picture of that. Has to be yours. Just don't find one on the web because we'll make you drive it up there to pick up the tickets if you do win. But go to Facebook.com/Jaguars today. Post a picture there, and we'll pull a couple of finalists out of that. Everybody's going to the drawing. After week 2 of the regular season, we'll pull one of the finalists and give you a pair of tickets to go see the home opener. And who knows whose debut that will be in that particular game. If your foundation of your home is letting you down, don't let it. Foundation professionals can help you out. They'll give you the peace of mind that your home is safe. They'll work with your insurance company, and financing is available. Licensed and insured, 287-2690 for Foundation Professionals of Florida. Visit them online at foundationprosfl.com. Coming back, we will take a look at this date in football history. Also, the Honda drive around the NFL. Catch up on what happened over the weekend that was. Still got game tonight with Washington and Cleveland going at it. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony, Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm Lauren Brooks with your 1010XL 92.5 FM Heekin Orthopedic Local Sports Update, brought to you by Osteen Volvo. The Jags are back to work, preparing for Friday night's preseason contest against the Lions in Detroit, and yesterday's practice saw the return of Cecil Shorts III. Here's how the veteran receiver felt after so much time off.
My first real practice, I guess, since OTAs. Felt good to be back out there with the guys, just grounding again, and I got some work to do, though. So I'm glad I'm back, and I'm a little rusty. And in some ways, I got to get back to it, and I'm just glad to be out there with the guys again.
That sounds courtesy of Jaguars.com. Outside linebacker Dakota Watson made his practice debut after having 2 sports hernia surgeries due to a groin injury. Watson's now battling for the starting spot with Leroy Reynolds after missing all of OTA's minicamp and training camp up to this point. Middle linebacker Paul Posluszny was also able to return after missing the Bears game due to a biceps contusion. Over the weekend, Ed White running back Taylor Thomas verbally committed to Utah after a season in which he rushed for almost 900 yards. And the Jacksonville Suns are back at home tonight, beginning a 4-game homestand with the Pensacola Blue Wahoos. First pitch comes up at 6:05 from Bragan Field at the baseball grounds of Jacksonville. I'm Lauren Brooks with your 1010XL 92.5 FM Heekin Orthopedic Local Sports Update, brought to you by Osteen Volvo. More Jaguars today with Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony is coming up next on your home for the Jags, 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
This date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. This was a good day for Jim Kelly, and we hope he has many more good days. He honestly may be my favorite person in football that I've ever interviewed. Just a genuinely nice guy, and obviously battling cancer now. Bon Jovi tried to buy some goodwill by trying to meet up with Jim Kelly and maybe partner up with him. Jim Kelly's wife was like, "We're not going to partner up with any Toronto group." So quickly laid that to rest. 1986, though, Jim Kelly signed, at the time, the richest contract in NFL history, $7.5 million over 5 years. Now that's what...
third string money.
One year of Mercedes Lewis.
Right.
He'll get you. 1 year of Paul Posluszny. That was Jim Kelly back in the day. And also, Earl Campbell called it quits. He retired from the National Football League. He was trying to catch on with the Saints and had played a little bit the previous season and came into camp, they said, at 225 pounds, looked phenomenal. Looking back at some old stories, but just, Earl, you want to talk about a guy who got beat up every time he put on the pads. And remember that story in Sports Illustrated where he was sitting on the back of his truck, I think, and the gist of it, he could basically hardly walk anymore. We actually had him on with Maurice Jones-Drew on Sirius last year. And he said he's doing pretty well. He seems like he's getting along. And he called Maurice Marquise for the entire interview. And I kept resetting it. It was phenomenal. You had to know Maurice was really loving that. Yes, Marquise. I'm a big fan of yours, Marquise. Fantastic.
Happy... I'm surprised Maurice didn't say hang up on him.
No, I know. He knew enough to say this guy is, even though he's probably never seen him play, maybe in some highlights, he is a legend. I used to love watching Earl back in the day. I was like, you know, one of those, I've always been a Jets fan, but I enjoyed watching Houston and I enjoyed watching the San Diego Superchargers back then, or Houston only for Earl Campbell, and they could never quite knock off Pittsburgh and take that next step, yep. Despite Bum Phillips' best efforts. Happy birthday, Yurko, was born on this date in 1967. So, a lot of things, and, Herschel Walker, I don't know if I've seen this in a few places. This was not a pro football thing. He was still in college at the time, but he took out a Lloyd's of London insurance policy for $1 million. I'm guessing because that has been noted. I mean, it's so commonplace now.
Probably the first one.
Either the first one or the first one of that size, yeah. Something like that, back in the day. This state in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're on Gate Parkway. And if you're in the market for a family dentist, if you need cosmetic work done, if you want the stop snoring mouth guard, oh my goodness, is your spouse going to thank you if you get that? Certified Invisalign provider, and you can get 10% off all first-time customer initial visits. Visit JamesJMcCall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services, or give them a call at 620-9225. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
All right, taking a look around the National Football League, a couple pieces of news here. The Atlanta Falcons made it a point two off seasons ago to sign offensive tackle Sam Baker to a 6-year, $41.5 million contract. After 2 years, the Falcons will get a total of 4 games out of Baker in two. He played in 4 games last year due to an injury to his left knee during the Falcons' preseason game this weekend. Baker tore the patellar tendon in his right knee and will miss the entire 2014 season. The Falcons drafted Jake Matthews with a 6th overall pick this year to eventually be the right tackle. And I guess drafting a Texas A&M player in the first round with the idea of playing them at right tackle to start and eventually moving them to left side sounds pretty familiar to all the Jaguar fans out there. Drew Brees, who hasn't played yet in the preseason because of a strained oblique muscle, is expected to make his debut on Saturday when the Saints play the Colts in Week 3 of the NFL preseason. Brees was a full participant in practice for the first time yesterday. Tonight, we get Round 2 of Hoyer v. Manziel. We will check the scorecards again tomorrow, see who is ahead on points after Cleveland-Washington on pseudo-Monday Night Football. And finally, Blaine Gabbert is terrible. Still the worst. 8 of 14, a whopping 40 yards, 2.9 yards per attempt.
2.4 for the entire preseason.
Right, and a pick for Blaine Gabbert in that.
He and Trent Richardson are going neck and neck, man. Those guys, who's going to have the higher average per attempt or carry? Fantastic.
How did that guy ever start here? How did he win 5 games?
He's got $2 million guaranteed coming his way. You know what? I mean, if I'm Blaine Gabbert, look, I don't want to be embarrassed. And I played football my whole life. Hopefully he loves it, you know,
that's the problem. I don't think he does.
Maybe he doesn't,
it.
Right? And maybe, you know, it would suck to have that taken away. At the end of the day, he's like, yep, y'all hate on me all you like. That's $2 more million than you're going to make this year, or, you know, a big, 1.9 or whatever more than you're going to make this year. It's a good life if you can get it.
Yeah, I don't know how the Niners can move forward with him.
That's the question. You've got guaranteed money, and sometimes that speaks loudly. They've got Josh Johnson there, who played for Harbaugh in college and is an athletic guy in the mold kind of Kaepernick, and you would think would make a suitable kind of backup if you want to continue to run the same kind of offense.
Yeah, I mean, watching some of his throws yesterday, over the middle to the running back, way too much heat on it, right through the hands, behind him. It's just the same stuff we saw here the last 2 years.
It's really amazing in hindsight that you would give anything knowing that he has guaranteed money left on his deal.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you kind of probably could have figured, what would the market, what would the demand have been for Blaine Gabbert on the open market? Could you have...
It probably would have been zero.
Right. So, you know, you go, but then again, you're San Francisco. It's just, it's the fact that you're saddled with the $2 million. Because a sixth round pick to them when they had so many picks. I think they're, boy, right now, they've got some serious injuries on that football team.
Their depth has taken a hit because of cap issues. You know, they're trying, you know, they've started, you know, re-signed some guys. They have Boone's holding out. I mean, I thought before camp that the 40, and I thought this way at the combine when Harbaugh and Balky were having that pissing match, I thought 49ers are headed for a fall this year, and I think they're going to be.
Well, I think it's become, over the last couple of weeks, I don't want to say in vogue, but we've seen some predictions that have them missing the postseason. It shouldn't be shocking. I mean, it looks like Seattle's kind of picking up in the preseason where they left off, but 50% over, you go back over 15 years, it's roughly 50% of the teams that go to the postseason don't make it the next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's in, you know, if you really want to split hairs here, they didn't even win their division.
So, right, and you had another team in the division that won 10 games. So,
I mean, if they lose, if a two-game swing for them probably doesn't mean they would make the playoffs.
Well, I mean, you lose Aldon Smith for 4 to 6 games, or anticipating that suspension is going to be, and Navarro Bowman hopes to come back by mid-season. Mm-hmm. That's two of your key players on the defensive side of the football right there. Boone's holding out. I just got a tweet from Devin Priester, at Devin Lamar, said, I know you were joking on Friday, but why not take a look at Alex Boone from San Fran, then let the other three battle at center? I don't think I was joking as much as I don't think the Jags would want to tie up the kind of money in the guard position that it would take, because he's under contract
Beatles.
For 2 more years. Right, and you paid Beatles, and that's typically a position where you find guys and you plug them in and you're able to go play.
I'm told that they're not interested.
Because of the price tag, the expected price tag, or just...
The question I asked around was, any interest in Boone, and it was just no. And at this point, they're just trying to figure out center, and I think they're fine with Linder at right guard.
And I think they are, too. I don't think that's the question, but I think...
Most of them are loath to give up a mid-round pick.
Well, if that's what it takes... Not only if you give up a mid-round pick, and... you have to pay the guy. The guy's under contract for 2 more years, and he clearly wants a big money contract. I don't think there's. Look, what are you going to hope to get with a mid round pick?
Mm-hmm.
A really good player, right? So if you get one who's 26, 27 years old, I don't understand why that's a bad thing. If that were in fact the case, but that mid round pick, what he does, you tie him into that mid round pick contract for the next 4 years too. So the economics of it. Probably is a thing that, as much as anything, it doesn't make sense. I think just watching that game and hearing Tony Boselli talk about Linder's work at center, you know, as the game was going on, and then talking to him on Friday morning, I was really impressed with what he was able to do at center. And so you start having visions of, all right, well, what if you bring in an established guard and you can play Linder at center, and then you don't have McClendon or Brewster in your starting lineup, which is probably a positive right now.
Yeah, it's you know, do they regret? I mean, if they took Linder in the third round and thought he could have played a center, do they regret not making that call in mid-May, saying we're going to put him at center,
and just right, and they just
ride it out and let somebody else let other guys slug it out for right guard, and it probably would have been those same two guys. And so, if he's going to be a center eventually, why not just put him in there right now?
Well, I don't know if you had any feeling that he was going to be a center eventually, right? And I think you felt with Brewster, you'd probably seen him at guard, and you thought if he's going to make it, he's going to make it at center, or he's not going to make it, you know, in the National Football League. And just looking, you know, the way they talk, going back to everything they talked about Mike Brewster, all the time he spent with Luke Joeckel rehabbing and getting stronger, and they really liked the work he was putting in, you know, but... in the end of the day, if you can't move guys off the point, and I think that's what Mike Brewster's biggest issue is, he gets overpowered.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they have a problem there.
They do.
And they have very little time to figure it out.
Right. I mean, we've got 2 weeks, and there are not a lot of great options because,
you're not going to go find a center.
You wouldn't expect you could find. You might be able to find a guard, but even then, are you going to find a starting caliber guy. Who was it that came in that they just picked up? Cody, who was it? They picked up and immediately he's your backup left tackle.
Yeah. Well, the Jaguars guard problem is shared by several other teams in this league. So they're not alone, which means the problem is harder to solve.
Right, and right, because even if somebody becomes available, you're not the only one fighting to grab them. What else did you see yesterday that stood out to you, good or bad? We talked about Chad Henne seemed to continue his solid play. Cecil Shorts getting some reps for the first time in 3 weeks. Anything else that kind of jumped out to you?
I thought it was a positive that Gerhardt did practice, which means he came through the game okay. Great, he had 2 days off. You know, he's not going to take a lot of 11-on-11 reps, but when he did, he was active in terms of he caught a pass, ran a couple of times. So I think it's obviously important to the offense to get him back on schedule health-wise. And I think Thursday was a big step. Yesterday was a big step.
Where are you more concerned with the offensive line? Is it the passing game or the running game?
I think right now the running game, because I had this stat the other day. They've had a lot of carries go for zero or lost yardage with the starters. A lot of zero, minus one, minus two, minus four, something like that. Your passing game works better with second and five.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, so I think they're protecting okay. I think their second unit's protecting Bortles really well. So I think the passing game is ahead of the running game at this point.
You know, in terms of Denard Robinson, he has made some nice runs, pretty good average per carry. Again, working mostly against second teamers. Is it clearly Jordan Todman the backup? What is the kind of the mix you think we're going to see at running back early in the season?
Well, what we can judge is how have they worked in practice and games in terms of the pecking order, and Todman has been the clear number two. When Gerhardt wasn't in there, he was the first one in there.
Has Todman impressed you? He's impressed me at practice at times, but I don't know if I've seen much of a spark.
Yeah, it's just funny because I haven't paid attention to him as much because you sort of know what he did last year. You know, you're always looking at Denard. You're always looking at Storm Johnson.
Right.
I think those two guys are in the mix. I think Denard may be earning himself some more time because he is gaining yards against defenses. You know, he's running outside. He got some, you know, ran some inside stuff. So I think Denard's made some positive strides this month.
All right, we'll take a break. 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. That's This Date in Football History and the Honda Drive around the NFL. It's a Wild West Guns of Gold Money when we come back. Opportunity for you to score more tickets for the Jacksonville Axemen Championship game with the U.S. Rugby League final going off at Hodges Stadium this upcoming Saturday. Right here in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Got nothing, Tony. What do you got? Come on.
I don't know what the theme is, but this is by far my favorite band of the 80s, and it's really not even close. For me, the Clash is it.
That's fine. I don't think they're the quintessential band of the 80s. Not that
no.
That's what you said.
I wouldn't argue that
I'm
they were.
I'm just trying to tie all our themes together today.
I can't even remember what the first two clues were.
one of them was Tears for Fears, and the other was the White Stripes.
Yeah, Catch Hell Blues.
All right, I'll give you all some hints.
Is it the defensive backs?
You've given us three hints.
It's the clash between the fans and the and the league.
Oh,
right?
There
the
you
refs
go. It's the refs. Stripes, rule, law.
Everybody wants to rule the world?
Wah, wah.
Rule.
Really?
Rule.
Rules suck.
I thought this one was really easy. It was your fan feedback question of the day, brought
it
to you by Thomas Motors.
But I don't pay attention.
And it was the Clash, and I Fought the Law. At the same time, it was two clues in one song.
Exactly.
Amazing. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday.
Don't kick yourself too hard.
Referee. I wouldn't suggest it, but if you did, go to North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Revolvers, semi-autos, rifles, shotguns, home defense, you name it. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America. Guaranteed, you can even trade your gold for guns at gunsforjax.com, Wild West Guns and Gold. That's guns, the number 4, JAX.com online, or stop by Lane Avenue. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold. Have you been roped into the ALS challenge. I say roped into. It's such a good call. Have you been sucked into the ice bucket challenge?
No, no.
You have not?
No.
I got called out twice yesterday, so I'm supposedly today I'm supposed to dump a bucket of ice on my head, which my son.
What does that do then? I mean,
what's happened is, in all seriousness, like donations since it started. In the period of like the last couple of weeks are like tenfold compared to what they were the same time last year. So people have enjoyed watching it, and they've encouraged them to donate to ALS research, and it's actually worked. So, I mean, it's, you know, in and of itself.
If your kid's challenges, does that even count?
Well, no, I haven't been challenged by my kid. I was just going to say, I'm going to let my kid, I got somebody, a couple of Facebook friend and one of my cousins up in New Jersey. I don't know how, whatever. I got challenged. So I'll let my kid come home, and if he has a good first day of school, let him dump a bucket of ice on my head. You both can expect the gauntlet to be thrown down sometime in the next 12 hours or so.
I'm sure.
So I think everybody wants to see O'Halloran out at Jaguar practice.
Those are the circles we run in. I saw Cristiano Ronaldo.
I don't have any actual friends. I need the media acquaintances.
He did the ice bucket challenge. You know who Ronaldo called out on his two people?
Pele and Obama.
Beyonce and Lil Wayne. That's who he called out on his ice bucket challenge, and you're going to call out me and O'Halloran.
Who do you think I'm going to call out that it even knows who I am? Are you kidding me? You guys barely know who I am.
That's great stuff.
I thought about calling you out when I did it on Saturday, Mike, but I did not.
Oh, did you do it on Saturday?
I did. I called out the rest of the cast of Helmets and Heels, though.
Did you? Oh, see, that's good. That makes sense. And have they responded?
Not yet. There's a little issue with the video.
I would like to see the Heels ladies dump a bucket of ice water over themselves.
I think I'm going to do it tomorrow
like,
night.
You should have like challenged like a couple players or something. That would have made for a good segment.
Ooh, good call. Maybe I'll do it again.
Lauren.
Lauren. You see, Lauren could do that. They'd be like, I have no idea. They'd like, maybe they do it for her. They wouldn't do it for me. So you did it on Saturday?
I did, yeah. But I was smart. I did it with ocean water and then ice. So the ice wasn't quite as cold as had I done it with a hose water.
Hose water.
Right. When you do hose water, it's freezing.
Right. Anytime you wear the hose, it's funny.
You could do sink water, too, you know?
Sure.
I mean, it's supposed to have ice in it, so it could be cold regardless
of
what
kind
of water
chilly.
We're talking about.
Yeah. Seawater warmed it up a little bit, though.
Okay, whatever the case, is there video of this? Because you're supposed to video this and post it.
There is video of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going to post it because I was in my bathing suit.
That's the point of the whole thing.
And your challenge goes unaccepted.
Well, no, really it'll be sent to them via email, but it just won't be posted for the world.
Well, then your challenge again. Like,
oh,
man. Right. You have to publicly post and challenge people for this whole thing. And do you really think anyone wants to see me in my own version of the wet t-shirt contest?
You
no,
don't wear a white shirt. That's my only advice to you.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Good call.
You'll get some comments.
Advice.
Good call. That is not bad advice. There. What if I do it backwards with my back facing the camera? It still counts, right?
Yeah, that counts.
As long as the ice bucket comes over me.
You just have to accept the challenge verbally and then, you know, challenge the other people.
I think my son would appreciate dumping the bucket of ice water on me.
Did he get it up high enough?
And we've got the whole playset swing set thing in the back, so he can be up on the top tier. And just go to town on Dad, and you'll get to see my nicely new manicured lawn.
Yeah.
That I spent 6 hours on yesterday working on that.
Good plan. I like it.
There you have it.
Let's see you tomorrow.
And whom else will we
What about Joe Fortunato? That?
That's not a bad idea, as a matter of fact. But we'll see about that. We'll work on a third. CBS apparently thinks the Jags will be the fifth worst team in the National Football
Progress.
League this year. Easy now.
Sons of bitches.
I didn't say you had to be angry about it. Do you think that's kind of reasonable? I'm not asking you to make your official season prediction. Is that kind of in the ballpark you expect, or you think this team has shown enough that you think they'll be a little bit more competitive than that?
I mean, I think they're going to be better than Raiders. I think they're going to be better than the Bucks. I think they're going to be better than the Dolphins. I think they're going to be better than Cowboys.
Let me see who they've got. I know they had the Raiders as the worst team in the National Football League.
I think they're going to be better than the Titans.
Maurice Jones-Drew thinks
they're
going to the Super Bowl, by the way.
They may go 0-16.
I doubt they'll go 0-16.
It's going to be so bad.
But I think their defense, I mean, you look at some of the guys they picked up on defense, I think their defense might be pretty decent. They're, to me, clearly the worst team in the division. The first team for Kansas City looked pretty good last night, considering Jamal Charles wasn't playing in that football game.
It did, especially, I know Carolina's got some pieces that are moving around on defense compared to where they were last year, but that was a really rock-solid defense last year. Kansas City's moved the ball 2 weeks in a row in the preseason with that number one offense. Look, we all expect the Jags to be better, more competitive than they were last year. I'm not sure how many wins I expect that to directly translate to. I mean, I expect them to be picking probably somewhere between 8 and 12 or something like that. I mean, that's about the range that I would expect the Jags to wind up this year. And it winds up 5, okay, not a big deal to me.
Yeah, they I think they had Houston at 6. It's, the internet has decided to stop working at this very moment for me, so I couldn't tell you what the order was, but I know they had Oakland as the worst team in the National Football League, and they may have had the Bucs worse than the Jags as well.
Tennessee.
Let me maybe. Go. I'll take a look. I'll
you
get
got
to
it.
I'll get to it.
Yeah, I don't. I think Tennessee was maybe around 7.
I mean, I guess I put the Jags in the 24 to 26 range. So what does that mean? 6 teams are worse than that?
Yeah, 7 or whatever. I think that's, yeah, look, I'm not saying it's impossible.
I could finish second in this division.
They look like they're going to finish second in this division, right? You know, last year, historically bad for a half of the season, and they still ended up the third pick in the draft as opposed to one of the top two. I don't think, getting outside the top 5 is that out of the, realm of possibility.
What no, and looking at it, according to Dane Brugler's mock on there, at least.
They did 2 mock drafts, yeah, basically, with the same order. I guess they got together and said, all right, let's base it on some consistency. So what was the order?
The Raiders at 1, the Vikings at 2, Cleveland 3, Houston 4, Jags at 5.
Houston was 4, all right.
Yeah,
so
and then they have Buffalo at 6, but that would be Cleveland.
Well, how can Cleveland possibly be in the top 5 with Johnny Manziel?
I don't know, man.
That's
crazy talk.
That's a certified impossibility. I actually kind of like what he said. He said he's not ready for the Pittsburgh Steelers week 1. He said, don't get me wrong, I could be ready. I could get ready. But right now, I don't feel like I'm ready to start the season as a starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. You think? Do you think he is, or do you think Hoyer will get the job to start?
I think Manziel will be the starter, and he won't
in
be
the first week.
Yeah, he won't be ready, but he'll be the starter.
Mary Kay Cabot, who obviously covers him for the Plain Dealer in Cleveland, said that she thinks all along it's been in the back of their mind going into Pittsburgh with that rivalry and that environment that it would take an exceptional distance between Manziel and Hoyer for them to throw Manziel into that kind of environment. How much do you think that factors in with the Jags with, you know, not just Bortles' readiness, but the offensive line's readiness to protect him early in the season?
I think it plays a huge part because who knows who's going to be lining up at center. You know, and so first-time center, rookie quarterback. So I think it plays a big role, that, and I think also playing at Philly, at San Diego in those first 4 weeks, I think that plays a big part too.
Yeah, 3 out of the 4 on the road. But if the offensive line has issues, and I guess you'll anticipate now getting Austin Pastor back, hopefully, you know, say a month, let's say he's back by the home opener against the Colts. Maybe that's best case scenario, something like that. So you figure the line's going to get a little bit stronger after you get a few games in the season. But if they have trouble protecting, if that is an issue early on the season, is that something do you think that, can keep Blake Bortles sidelined indefinitely?
No, I mean, because once I've always thought it's going to be minimum 4 games, and then after that, you know, put Bortles in there at some point, unless all the receivers are hurt, all the linemen are hurt, and then, you know, then you're screwed anyway. So I'd still play him. So if you keep up making excuses, I think you're just delaying.
I'm not you.
I'm sure internally they're saying, well, we got some issues at the offensive line, and the schedule's tough, and Cecil's not back, and Allen Robinson's not back. We got to go with Henny. Well, there's always going to be something wrong in this league, so I would just play him right now. I would make the announcement today if I'm Gus.
No, you wouldn't, because you would have made the announcement the moment. Yeah, draft night. Right.
We drafted a starter. We've heard that in City before, right? we drafted a starter.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know,
well, the weapon.
Just like I'm sure would have worked out completely different if Blaine Gabbert had been anointed the starter from day one, and that off season, of course, where they had no mini camps,
sure,
or OTAs, wouldn't have mattered. regardless, we've got tickets to go see the Axemen play.
Yeah.
This Saturday, playing the Philadelphia Fight.
Yep, Saturday night at 7 o'clock over there at UNF.
Both undefeated?
Both undefeated.
Axemen have been in the championship game, like, it seems like every year for the last 4 years or so.
They go a lot.
They do. And they've got a chance. You can go watch, or you can watch. You can go if you can make it up to the Motor City. You can watch the Jags play Detroit on Friday night and actually go see the Axemen compete for the Rugby League Championship on Saturday at Hodges Stadium on the campus of UNF. All you got to do is be the third caller at 641-1010. Lauren will take your call, put your name on a waiting list, and they'll have tickets waiting for you at Will Call when you show up on game day. It's that simple. Third caller right now at 641-1010. We'll hook you up with a pair of tickets to the Axemen Championship game. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Hara, and Fat Tony here with you. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. When we return, we'll take a look at the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Everybody's favorite zebra head.
Yeah.
Rescue me.
Oh, well, referees. Penalty calls.
I was watching.
He's got it.
I was watching.
Good job.
Man, he is quick. If he had led with that, he would have been all over it, I think.
I would have.
I was watching Saturday Night Live. Who's the girl who does the news, the weekend update now? Cicely Tyson?
Cicely something.
Cicely,
yeah.
Strong?
Strong, maybe.
Strong?
Yeah.
Cicely Tyson, somebody else, isn't she?
Yeah. I think it is strong. I think it's Cicely Strong.
Story like, scientists now believe zebras got their stripes from whatever it was. And yeah, I think she's hilarious. It's not going to sound funny now, but something about, I thought it was because they had just escaped from horse jail. But to me,
that's pretty funny.
I think she's pretty comical. All right. There you have it.
Where's the laugh track, Lauren?
Not going to be as funny. Oh, no. We don't pander. Are you kidding me?
Where's the soundtrack?
I'll provide my own. All right. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you today if all the penalty flags this preseason up significantly. This week we saw an average of about 21 per game as opposed to about 12 per game in the regular season last year. Have they taken away from your enjoyment of watching football this preseason? Tony, what did the folks say?
Here's what we got from Peter. We got absolutely ridicules flags on defense. I think he meant ridiculous.
Yes.
Hashtag you got to be kidding me. Hashtag Jaguars today.
Did you just ridicule his, or did you just ridiculous his tweet?
He ripped the question and then answered the question.
He ridiculous'd his tweet.
From Tommy, we got, being a football official myself, was very impressed with the 31-yard toss by the back judge. Hashtag Jaguars today. Didn't really answer the question there, though, Tommy. I think he's already won a shirt. So now he's just...
What did he say? Did he say he enjoyed it himself?
Submitting commentary.
What was his comment?
He was impressed by the 31-yard toss.
So maybe that means he was... It increased his enjoyment.
It's added to his enjoyment because they threw it a long way. But I'm at the dude. Said, yes, slows the game way too much. Only good flag was thrown by the ref for over 30 yards. Hashtag Jaguars today. Eric said, oh, God, yes, especially late in the game when it just drags on play after play. Hashtag keep it in your pants. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Ocho Fisho, we got, I get why they're doing it, but it disrupts the flow of the game. 6,000 passing yards may happen. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Jags Movie Guy, it has slowed down the game considerably without adding any noticeable safety to it. Hashtag how. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Ben, just happy football is back, penalties and all. If I see this many flags in September, I'll be a little annoyed. Hashtag Jaguars today. Chad said simply, yes, ridiculous. Duval Doom, yes, it sucks. From Bortle Boards, yes, all these ticky-tack fellas called. But when Blake nearly had his head taken off, hashtag crickets. Hashtag Jaguars today.
Good call on that.
And finally from Joshua, no, not really. It's still preseason, and there's only so much enjoyment to be had regardless. Hashtag Jaguars today.
All right. My cousin John on Facebook said, this is really my cousin, he said, in England, they have Morris dancing. American football is beginning to resemble it. Google it. I did. I have no idea how it has anything to do with that. So go Google it yourself and you tell me if it has anything to do with that. He's also one of the ones who called me out in the ALS challenge. Thanks a lot, John. Appreciate that. Jeff Cummings said, no impact, not wild about preseason football because it's meaningless, just as the excess flags are meaningless. Adjustments will happen by opening day. Hashtag Jaguars today. The outcome, the score is meaningless. I don't think preseason football is meaningless. By that token, training camp's meaningless, and OTAs are meaningless, and all that stuff's meaningless because they don't go down in the scorebook. But I got your point. Ridge Sink said, not sure if I'm watching football or a comedy where guys in striped shirts keep interrupting the show to make a point that no one wants to hear. Lots of ghost calls that television can't even pick up. I'd rather watch tough-nosed football. The dance of the yellow flags. Chris Wayne says, I hate it. However, the 20-something sports party crowd is excited because they can now play the penalty flag drinking game and be hammered before halftime. Does the 20-something sports party crowd need the license? You wouldn't think, but you know what?
As the game started.
Despite that, I was heavily involved in the drinking game scene myself. You didn't really need a reason. I guess you just need that little extra impetus.
The booze was enough.
And let's see. During the game, Don and Fuego said during the Jags game we laughed about it. Then we were there were like 20 consecutive flags and it got kind of annoying. And Derek Kobaka answered hashtag no. That's not. And then finally Robbie Smith, games were very hard to watch, especially during the Jags game when there were like five in a row. Hashtag ref has a better arm than Gabbert. So there you go. Among other many clever hashtags.